Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Indian Family Law and Parental Rights Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 25, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Adoptive Couple v. Baby Girl. The case involved the Indian Child Welfare Act, or IWCA, of 1978 and considers the following: whether a biological father who initially renounced custodial rights over his daughter can invoke the ICWA to block her adoption by a non-Indian couple, and second, whether the ICWA's definition of parent includes an unwed biological father who has not followed state rules for obtaining legal status as a parent. In an opinion delivered by Justice Alito, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that if the biological father is assumed to be the parent for IWCA purposes, the act does not bar termination of the father's parental rights. Chief Justice Roberts, as well as Justices Kennedy, Thomas, and Breyer joined the majority opinion. Justice Thomas and Justice Breyer filed concurring opinions. Justice Scalia filed a dissenting opinion. Justice Sotomayor also filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Ginsburg and Kagan, and by Justice Scalia in part. To discuss the case, we have Tom Getty, Commissioner on the Indian Law and Order Commission, and of counsel with Biggin McCrutchen, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Getty.
This is Tom Getty. On June 25, 2013, the Supreme Court decided to allow an Indian child to be returned to her adoptive parents under a tight reading of the text of the Indian Child Welfare Act, known as ICWA. The decision may be a disappointment to the specific Indian father and his tribe, but was not a disappointment to those in the larger federal Indian law community that feared the court might gut ICWA by undercutting the special status of Indians in American constitutional and federal common law. The court split 5-4 in Adoptive Couple versus Baby Girl, with Justice Alito authoring the majority opinion, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, and Breyer. The opinion rested on the literal application of the statute, saying it applies only when an Indian biological parent is or was in custody. And in this case, the Indian father was never in custody of the child, where the adoption of the child would result in the breakup of the Indian family. And there was no breakup here. The court's decision reflected some basic assumptions behind the congressional language, that the statute was designed to prevent the adopting out of an Indian child from an Indian family, from a family that has or had custody of the child, to a non-Indian family, thereby contributing or constituting a breakup of the Indian family. Here, the particular facts did not fit that pattern, and thus the court found ICWA did not apply. In 1978, Congress enacted ICWA to remedy what was then a high percentage of Indian families broken up by the removal of their children from them by non-tribal public and private agencies. ICWA established minimum federal standards for the removal of Indian children, and did so under its far-reaching power to legislate in the field of Indians. Normally, it bars, as a matter of federal law, involuntary termination of an Indian parent's rights, except where, quote, continued custody, close quote, will result in serious harm to the child, and then only following remedial efforts to prevent the breakup of the Indian family. ICWA provides placement preferences for the adoption of Indian children to members of the child's extended family, other members of the Indian child's tribe, or other Indian families. Under review here was the decision of the South Carolina Supreme Court upholding a family court's determination to remove a 2-year-old child from its non-Indian adoptive parents, who held the child since its birth in Oklahoma and removed with the child to South Carolina. Following ICWA, the state court held in favor of the Indian father, an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, who had earlier relinquished his rights to the child to his non-Indian fiancée, who, unbeknownst to the father, put the child up for adoption at birth. Because the mother's attorney had provided the wrong information on the father, and the mother signed a form indicating the child was Hispanic, Oklahoma authorities and the Cherokee Nation did not find ICWA's provisions applicable to this baby, and the baby was adopted by the adoptive couple. When the father learned that the child had been adopted out, by virtue of being served with the required adoption complaint, he sought to stay the adoption proceedings in South Carolina. Meanwhile, the Cherokee Nation also learned of the adoption and intervened pursuant to ICWA. The family court there ruled for the Indian father, reasoning in part that ICWA's parental termination provision allows, quote, continued custody, close quote, by an Indian parent of an Indian child, unless it is likely to result in serious emotional or physical damage to the child. As a result of the denial of the adoptive couple's adoption petition, custody of the child, then 27 months old, was awarded to the Indian father. The Supreme Court found ICWA quite literally did not bar the termination of the Indian father's parental rights, reversed and remanded, thereby allowing the adoptive couple to reacquire the child. At 25 U.S.C. Section 1912F, an involuntary termination of parental rights is conditioned on a showing concerning the, quote, continued custody, close quote, of the child, and the Supreme Court majority decision concluded continued custody refers to custody that a parent already has or had at some point in the past. Here, the court reasoned that biological father, the child's Indian parent, never had custody of the child, nor is ICWA's principal goal implicated where there was no removal from an Indian family. Additionally, the majority found no issue with the text of the law that requires that remedial efforts are made to prevent the breakup of the Indian family set forth in Section 1912D. Where an Indian parent abandons a child prior to birth, the court reasoned, and the child has never been part of the Indian parent's legal or physical custody, there is no breakup of the Indian family. The court also reasoned this provision has to be read in harmony with the continued custody provision, which would lead to the conclusion the breakup of the Indian family can only occur where there is or was custody. What is interesting about the case, however, was not the facts of custody or abandonment before birth, but the tension over whether the court would question the fundamental premises of ICWA, permitting special treatment of American Indians in such a way as to preempt state law in an area of law fraught with emotion as is family law. In fact, the court did not question the basic purpose or efficacy of ICWA, a law the court noted was enacted to help preserve the cultural identity and heritage of American Indian tribes. Only Justice Thomas, who concurred in the result, articulated his view that there is no constitutional foundation for the statute. This is consistent with Justice Thomas's narrow reading of Congress's power to legislate in respect to Indian tribes. Referring to the Indian Commerce Clause in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, Justice Thomas looks to whether the legislation relates to commerce, which at the time of the ratification did not include economic activities such as manufacturing and agriculture, no less non-economic activity such as the adoption of children. He reasons the statute deals with child custody proceedings, not commerce, and that it does not directly implicate Congress's power to regulate tribes as tribes, but instead reaches to individual children. Thus, he concludes there is no constitutional basis for Congress to act in this area. No other justice joined in Justice Thomas's opinion, nor in his analysis. Justice Sotomayor authored a dissent joined by Justices Ginsburg and Kagan, and in part by Justice Scalia, who authored his own dissent as well. The principal dissent argues that the majority is faithful neither to the text nor purpose of the act, and that ICWA should apply to a non-custodial biological parent. Reasoning that the father is indisputably a parent, ICWA's application to the termination of parental rights goes to, quote, any, close quote, action, resulting in the termination of the parent-child relationship, this language coming from the Act's definitions. Consequently, and for other reasons, the dissent finds ICWA should have applied here and the majority's reading of the text to be too strained. Justice Scalia joined, but also provided a dissent of his own, in which he offered a different reading of the word continued in continued custody. He suggests that the family court must satisfy itself not merely that the initial custody is not likely to result in serious emotional or physical damage to the child, but that continued custody, i.e., in the future, is not likely to do so. He also added a thought about parenthood. Parents have their rights, no less than children do, he says. He says, quote, this father wants to raise his daughter, and the statute amply protects his right to do so. There is no reason in law or policy to dilute that protection, close quote. The upshot of the decision is that 8 of the justices do not question Congress's ability to regulate preemptively the matter of Indian child welfare and the preference for placement of Indian children in Indian families. It is just that this case, when the text of the law is read by the majority, is applied to these facts, does not fit the usual understanding of how ICWA is applied to bar the termination of parental rights or to prevent the placement of an Indian child with a non-Indian family. The act survives intact, but has been diminished rather narrowly. These facts are not likely to be repeated with any substantial frequency, and thus the decision is more significant for what it did not do than for what it did. This concludes the podcast on universal jurisdiction.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.